As I was saying also earlier on, if you guys want to follow the conversation, of course, it's 011-883-0702 if you want to give me a call. 31702 for your SMSs. And then hashtag Karima Brown Show. That is the hashtag that I will be using, you know, to hear from you. But let's go straight to Bongi Nkosi Dlamini. Good evening to you and thank you for joining us.
Good evening, sir. Good evening to your listeners.
Great one. So, Mr. Dlamini, I mean, if we can just start off by looking at this, I mean, it's I find it interesting that Human Rights Day, where it's a commemoration, obviously, of the human rights that you and I are protected by in Chapter 2 of the Constitution, or the Bill of, commonly referred to as the Bill of Rights. You know, it's a commemoration. Why did the IFP decide to launch their manifesto in Gauteng today?
I mean, you know, about 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, we launched our national manifesto in Durban on the 10th of March at Chatsworth Stadium. And today we were launching our provincial Gauteng manifesto on the 21st of March. You know, 21st of March is a very special day to the IFP. You know, for a fact that in 1960, when there was that massacre in Chatsworth and in Nanga, there was a land in our liberation struggle, and 15 years down the line, in 1975, on the 21st of March, the IFP was born to try to continue where our liberation movement had left after the event. Yes, so the 21st of March for us is very important. So today we are launching our provincial manifesto. Secondly, we are celebrating our 44th birthday as a party to say to the people of Gauteng, as they did in 2016 when they went out to vote and the IFP registered gold for the first time outside KwaZulu-Natal, and we became kingmakers in three metros, which is Joburg, Mohale City, and Ekurhuleni. We are continuing on that path to say they can trust us to get the economy working, trust us to be tough on crime, trust us to promote responsible land reform, trust us to fix the education system, trust us to improve the healthcare system, trust us to champion gender equality, and trust us to redesign the housing system. Therefore, we are ready today to talk about that.
Okay, so, I mean, Mr. Dlamini, it's very interesting. I saw this, something that I was unaware of. There are only two people since 1994 that appeared on the 1994 ballot paper and will reappear on the 2019 ballot paper, and that is Reverend Kenneth Mashwe, of course, from the ACDP, as well as the leader of your party, being the IFP, and that is Mr. Mangosuthu Buthelezi. I mean, after all of these years of being in parliament, contesting elections, being part of the constitutional democratic process, I mean, is there still room for growth? Of course, there will always be room for growth within the IFP, but do you see that you have a realistic chance of growing in the up-and-coming elections, number one, and beyond that, that you can start moving into other areas and, I don't know, win metros or possibly even govern?
Oh, yes, the evidence I've just given you now. I mean, the age of a leader has nothing to do with the performance of a party. South Africa, I mean, people of South Africa, they know that they can trust the IFP because of its track record. We're not one IFP. In the IFP, we don't recycle corrupt politicians. South Africans, if the IFP puts in its action plan to say this is what we're going to do and how we're going to do it, they will trust the IFP. And I agree with you, yes. I mean, in 1994, we got 10% of the voters. We were part of the government of national unity. We had our internal problems where there was a split in the 2011. But in 2014, the IFP started to arrest the decline. Because from being in 2016 local government elections, from running two municipalities, we're now running almost 22 municipalities in KwaZulu-Natal. And secondly, our kingmakers in Gauteng were already that growth. So we have arrested the decline and we are on an upward slide. That is why we are saying to the Africans in Gauteng, as you trust us to be part of the government in municipalities, you can also trust the IFP to be part of. Because the stronger the IFP in our legislatures and in the National Assembly, they're better for the IFP. You saw when the politics of chaos, insults, and disrespect became the order of the day and people voted on it. It was only the IFP that stood up and not sanity in Parliament to say this is, cannot embrace anarchy as new politics. Because South Africans don't want to insult, to hand insult to each other. They want us to have solutions to their problems. They send us to Parliament to serve their interests, not to hand insult to each other. That is why we are even saying they must trust us to deal with the land issue responsibly so. Because one of the problems that other countries have done is that you don't deal with the land issue, which has an economical, spiritual, emotion on it. Yes, redress, we agree with this proverb, we must deal with that. There is a lot of state-owned land that has been taken away, but the fact of the matter is the IFP is always on record to say what needs to be done, not what is popular.
Okay.
Distribution of land was a silver bullet for all the problems. 3 million Zimbabweans will not be in South Africa. Therefore, we are saying our people must be given land, but must be responsible in such a way that land does not lose its value.
I hear what you're saying, and obviously now we're going to get into the nitty-gritties of your manifesto, because I mean, and it's interesting how you had placed yourself in terms of the land debate and what it means for you as a political party. But I mean, there's a couple of things that I want to touch on before before we run out of time. First and foremost, okay. I mean, around the Bill of Rights, I find it very interesting that today was, of course, our national public holiday, but also our national commemoration, more importantly, of the human rights that we have in Chapter 2 of our Constitution. It is National Human Rights Day, and it seems that the Bill of Rights for you is something very important. Can you tell us a little more? Why the Bill of Rights in particular being mentioned in your manifesto?
It's because when we go back to the CODESA negotiations before the birth of our democracy, it is the IFP that insisted on the inclusion of the Bill of Rights in our constitution, because the ANC was saying the government of the people, that the people will be responsible and so forth. And if the IFP did not insist in the inclusion of the Bill of Rights in our constitution, also that the rights of our people are entrenched in the constitution, they are not on the wheels and the ceiling of the political party, imagine what would be happening now in our country without that. So we are on record that it was only the IFP that insisted on the inclusion of the Bill of Rights in our constitution, as we also insisted on the creation of provinces. As much as people gave us more to say they wanted to create a confederation and so forth, the IFP is not brought into politics of easings. We are driven by pragmatic politics that what works in South Africa. Currently, the trend is that socialism is the answer. Socialism has destroyed Africa, because socialism and capitalism are all foreign to us as Africans. We must come up with what is practical and what works for us to grow our economy.
Okay, fair enough.
For us, the Bill of Rights is very important, because it's one of our achievements at CODESA, because we fought for it to be included.
I hear what you're saying, but I find it very ironic, because I'm going to then jump ahead. I mean, there's many other things that you had mentioned, that's part of your manifesto launch. I mean, you placing a very strong emphasis on the Bill of Rights. You're talking about how you were the only party that pushed for a Bill of Rights. But then I'm going to jump straight to the death penalty, because I mean, I find it ironic that you're saying that as a political party, you were pushing for the Bill of Rights. Our Bill of Rights makes it clear that you have a right to life, which is in line with international instruments, such as, for example, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is the instrument that a lot of constitutions and Bill of Rights are based on. It's the international sort of benchmark coming through from the UN. And the right to life in South Africa, as well as the right to dignity, therefore ensures and says that we cannot take the state at no stage can take the life of a person. And yet you are in support of the death penalty. So I find that a bit ironic.
It's not ironic. Given the abnormality of the crime situation in South Africa, where criminals dare even to attack police stations, we are saying with the IFP, as much as we embrace the Bill of Rights and all the instruments of the UN, we all are saying, let us open a debate on the issue of the death penalty. We're not calling for it to return or not to return. We are saying, let us reopen the debate, because criminals don't care about the rights that are written in our constitution. They kill at will. They dare even attack our own police stations. Therefore, as the IFP, we are saying, as we are not saying it's an answer, but we are saying let us reopen the issue on the debate of the death penalty because of the abnormality of the situation of crime. I mean, everybody, we report almost daily about the brutality of criminals. They've got the tendency to attack our people in their own homes. We've got the tendency to attack businesses.
Look, I mean, we don't have to go through the long list of crime that we suffer. I think you and I will agree on that.
Sorry?
I said you and I will agree on the crime that we are suffering, you know, and what the impact of that particular crime is. I think that anyone who lives in South Africa is aware of what the situation is in South Africa. And that's not really what I want to deal with here. What I want to deal with, though, is that, I mean, going back to what you were saying.
Criminals don't care.
I hear what you're saying.
They are trembling on them on a daily basis, and the debate is that, are we prepared to even protect the right of somebody who is prepared to get violently
dead? You see, Bonge Nkosi, what you're failing to understand, and the more you speak, unfortunately, the deeper you're digging this hole, right? Because what you just said now was that the IFP was at the forefront, the only party that pushed for the inclusion of a Bill of Rights within our constitution. Let me finish so that you understand what you're responding to, please. You're saying that it was the only party to have pushed for the inclusion of a Bill of Rights in our constitution. And yet you come on air and you're telling me about the fact that how do we then protect the rights of these particular individuals? Now, you and I won't necessarily agree on that because all people have rights and all people need to have their rights protected. And obviously, imprisonment is a limitation of rights already.
Even our law agrees that immediately you tamper with other people's rights. That is why you've got jails and people are sentenced.
Exactly, and that's why I said that there's a limitation on rights already.
We are limiting their rights because they voted other people's rights.
Right, fine. Look, you and I are not going to agree on the death penalty issue, but I just find it extremely ironic.
I'm not saying we must have it. I'm saying let us open a debate on it.
But then that leads me to my next question, and it's an obvious question. If we're going to open up the debate, and I asked this for Mr. Singh the last time I spoke to him when he started this conversation, I believe in Parliament, where he said that there's a need for us to open up the discussion around the death penalty. My question was, what are we opening up for? Because we're not just having a general conversation at the dinner table about the death penalty. What is the proposition?
We are opening up the debate so that South Africans begin to debate the issue of the death penalty, because there are people who are leashing it out at really now without respecting other people's rights. And we are saying, is our system of the justice system government really giving the needed punishment for those who don't care about other people's rights? Let us debate it and see whether
Yeah, look, like I said earlier on, we are running out of time. We're not going to agree on this one. For me, I don't know what the debate still is or why there still needs to be a debate in the space. It's been settled, our Bill of Rights. It's a non-derogable right, the right to life. So I think that let's just move on to the next issue. Public transport is a massive issue in South Africa. Right now, as we know, in Soweto, we have major taxi routes that have been shut down because taxi drivers are busy taking pot shots at each other, as an example. The other problem that we also have is obviously that we know that a lot of the public transport that's efficient and very, you know, that works well is unfortunately unobtainable for a lot of poor people. What's your policy on public transport? Let's go there.
The IFP policy on transport is very simple. Is that we support the integrated public transport system where you've got the one single form of payment. Secondly, we call upon the government and the taxi industry to allow themselves to. The taxi industry must consent to be regulated. And after being regulated, secondly, therefore, government must look at subsidizing it as they do subsidize other public transport. That's one. Secondly, we cannot afford a situation where you've got we must have a subsidized ticket system for the housing for job seekers so that they are able to access that facility as a public facility, so private owned. So with the IFP, one, we are saying regulate and subsidize the taxi industry because it is the only black owned public system. Secondly, apart from that, go further in terms of creating jobs and empowering taxi owners and look at the chain, the chain value of the taxi industry. Who is manufacturing those taxis? Who is manufacturing tires? Who is owning transfer stations and so forth? So that we also benefit not only but because the approach of the ANC with the Reavaya and so forth has in fact benefited a few and killed a lot of small business taxi owners. That is why the IFP was afraid to say to them, you must agree to be regulated and stop the nonsense of fighting each other and killing each other. It's not going to help. It will justify you being closed down.
Okay. So, I mean, just in terms of the, where is that subsidy going to go to? Is the subsidy going to go to the taxi owners? Is that what you are suggesting? And then second to that, just let me finish my question. That? Let me just finish my question and then we can move on. So is are you going to subsidize the actual taxi owners, number one? And number two, I see that you're asking for a subsidy on the Gautrain. And I mean, the Gautrain is not probably the biggest source of transport. The vast majority of people commute internally within the parameters of a particular city, either by taxi or by bus, whether it be Metrobus or Reavaya in the instance of Johannesburg. So why specifically Gautrain? Why, what's so important about Gautrain?
Okay, firstly, let me deal with this issue of subsidizing taxes. One, when you subsidize the system so that you reduce the cost for the commuter, because for now, the commuter is bearing the brunt. You regulate and then subsidize the system so that you reduce the cost for the commuter. That's one. Second, wholly funded by our public funds. Therefore, it cannot be an elitist, exclusive use for the elite that can afford it. That is why we are saying for those who are unemployed, their tickets must be subsidized so they are able also to benefit from this public entity.
Okay, and a lot of people will then say that unfortunately the Gautrain just so happens to pass through very elitist areas, like, for example, O.R. Tambo International, Rosebank, into a very affluent, nice parts of Pretoria. So, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, unemployed youth would never have a use for it, but it is in itself a very elitist route, for lack of a better term.
It's an elitist route. We're also trying to publish this survey. That's why we're saying such a time, so they're able to access those opportunities. I agree with you on that one, but also job opportunities are there and economic opportunities are in those areas. Therefore, subsidizing so for them to be able to reach those areas.
Because we're running out of time, let's do a 2-for-1 on education and healthcare, and I find them as very positive policies. Can you just tell us very briefly what your education policy is and what is your healthcare policy?
Our education policy is very simple. Is that in a classroom, they must be disciplined, and two things must happen in a classroom. The teaching must take place, and learning must take place. We are worried about the role of teacher unions who have contributed in deprofessionalizing the teaching profession. We need to reprofessionalize it, make sure that teachers are taken care of so that they don't become just ordinary labor people who can compromise the education of our kids by going for smaller things. Therefore, we must take education seriously. Secondly, reduce the number of learners in each class and build more schools. Thirdly, make sure that we introduce at primary level subjects that are in line with what our economy needs. That is why we are calling on every municipality to have a skills audit register so that we are able to know what are the needs of that particular municipality. And our education system has a mismatch. We are not producing what our economy wants. Therefore, we cannot experiment with our education system. We need to know what is it that really, what kind of people need to know. Secondly, as we said, because that one of education also leads to unemployment and job creation.
Uh-huh.
Currently, we have a majority of people who are unskilled, either because they were excluded by apartheid and other issues, and the mismanagement of our country by the ANC. You've got a majority of people who are unemployed are from the ages of 25 years and 49, who are not skilled and ready for the fourth industrial revolution. They don't have skills for that. Therefore, you need to identify economic sectors currently who will be able to absorb these guys before. To prepare the young ones for the third industrial revolution.
Okay, fair enough. So that's where you want to go with that aspect. And then in terms of healthcare, what are some of the major issues and failures that you've seen and that you would like to address as a party?
As I said to you before, that the IST will not say things just for being popular, but will say things that will work. One, the health service is an essential service.
Mm.
It's an essential service. One, you need to professionalize the nursing and medical schools. Two, primary health care is very important. Most of the money should not go to academic hospitals, but must go to primary health care. That is why we are reopening the issue of the powers of provinces. Because when you look at the health issue, education, and the and policy,
yeah,
provinces, the ANC will tell you, provinces are frustrated. Because all they are just conveyor belts of national projects that don't talk to specific needs. Like right now in Gauteng, Gauteng is being owned by SADC countries for services that is they are rendering to our African brothers that they don't pay. But because Gauteng does not have rights, I mean powers to have policies on how to deal with these issues, provinces need to be given more powers on the most special issues of health, of issues of education, of issues of police. Because in the police, your MEC for police is just there to be a liaising officer between the community and the police, but they can't come up with specific policy issues. Like if you look at the Western Cape, they've got the issue of gangsters. You go to Eastern Cape, they've got the issue of theft. You go to the Limpopo, they've got the issue of witchcraft, whatever. You come to Gauteng, you've got a whole lot of basket of corruption. If you've got an MEC and a province that cannot take decisions, policy decisions on how to police.
How do we have specific policies and policing related to witchcraft?
They are very related. Policing and health, they are very related to that.
No, I'm saying policies on related specifically on policing witchcraft. You just said it about Limpopo.
No. In Limpopo, you had a problem
of
all the people being murdered. Being accused of being
of witchcraft, of
witchcraft, yes.
Yeah.
And nationally, you don't have a police force that is tasked to do exactly with that. But Limpopo, if Limpopo had the power to change policy on how to police ourselves, they'll be able to do specifically with that. Currently, nationally, we've got one unit which goes as far as things are everywhere they install in the country. In fact, each province should have that. And the MEC should have powers to be able to do those things. Thirdly, we've got the issue of immigrants.
Unfortunately, Bonginkosi, look, I mean, a lot of the stuff we have covered, you have mentioned also about the impact of immigrants and immigration in particular.
Okay,
I think we have covered all of the points that we needed to cover. Unfortunately, we're out of time. But thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
No problem. Cheers. That was Bonginkosi Dlamini, IFP Gauteng Chairperson.